Production. Recorded live.
Hey everybody, this is Tracy Brown, and I am so glad you decided to join in and listen to this episode of Intentionally Inclusive. What is Intentionally Inclusive? It's a series featuring candid conversations about diversity and inclusion in spiritual communities. And lucky me, I get to talk to all these really cool people about what they're doing, stories that they will share about what it means to be an intentionally inclusive leader, some of the growth pains and some of the successes they've had in their churches and centers and spiritual groups. And you'll get to hear lots of life stories, real life stories, about what makes people feel valued or not. The other thing that I love about this series is that I'm talking to such a wide variety of people. Obviously, you would expect that I talk to some ministers, and I'm also having the opportunity to talk to lay leaders and licensed practitioners and chaplains and some people who, as lay leaders, are also just involved in the topic of diversity and inclusion. So thanks so much for joining. If you'd like more information about Intentionally Inclusive, if you were referred to the show by a friend but you just want more background, please visit stainedglassspirit.net and click on the Intentionally Inclusive tab. There's a summary of the show. There's a link, a way for you to find what's in the archives as well as what's coming up. And there's also a link to the Intentionally Inclusive Masterclass series that's coming up in a few weeks. And so if you're listening to this by recording, the Masterclass series may already be active. And it is just a series of self-study on your own scheduled time classes related to your diversity welcoming factor, your inclusion worship factor, and other aspects related to diversity and inclusion in spiritual communities. So that's kind of an overview, but I'm sure you're sitting there listening going, okay, but who are you talking to today, and what's in it for me now? And today I am sitting here with a big smile on my face because I get to have a conversation with Reverend Georgia Prescott. Reverend Georgia is the spiritual leader, senior minister at the Center for Spiritual Awareness in West Sacramento, California. And I can honestly say I know no other single person who is more committed to diversity and inclusion in church than Reverend Georgia. So welcome, Reverend Georgia. I'm so glad you said yes.
Thank you, Tracy. It's great to be on the call, and thank you for doing this series.
Well, you know, I have this idea that this series will create, you know, a little mini library so that anyone who's working on this or even thinking about how can they invite more diversity or how can they really focus on creating a more inclusive environment in their church or spiritual community, that this little library will be available and they can, you know, listen to different perspectives. And you know, it's something that's really needed, I think. And I'm hoping that that people will find it of great value.
Yeah, it's really, really needed. Just the basic, you know, how do I go about it? It's not that I don't want to do this. It's that I'm clueless as to how I begin. Or maybe not clueless, but I need some help to go to the next step. So that's great. And I know that the Diversity Commission would be thrilled to put a link to this on our resources page of the website, at the Centers for Spiritual Living Diversity website.
Well, that's great. And what's really fabulous is that just having the opportunity, I think you're right, it's not that so much that people are completely clueless, but why should they try 18 different things to find one thing that works when they can listen to what's been working or get inspired and get specific ideas from people who've been already working this.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have a question that I often ask people, and that's when they think about diversity and inclusion, especially when they think about diversity, do they generally find themselves in conversations where diversity is an issue, a challenge, a problem, or do they mostly find themselves in conversations where diversity is an opportunity or an inspiration? And over, I mean, people like you and me, and we probably would say, oh, well, both. But a lot of times people say, oh, I never really thought about it. We never talk about diversity until there's something broken or something uncomfortable or something wrong. So my question for you is, what would you say to people who think they should only talk about diversity because there's been some blow-up, some lawsuit, or some problem that has occurred at their church?
Well, first I'd say that you're missing a huge growth opportunity. If what you want is to spread these principles of science of mind to a greater number of people, then really embracing diversity in a proactive way, not a reactive way, but a proactive way, will grow your church faster than anything that I've seen so far. So that's primarily what I would tell them. And also to let them know that while, you know, if you can develop a sense of humor around your mistakes and not take yourself too seriously, building diversity is great fun because you are learning about all kinds of different cultural habits that people have that I had no idea about, and just more sensitivity toward that. And then, of course, there's the spiritual invitation to have a more authentic experience of oneness.
I love all three of those. And what strikes me is that people listening may not know anything about your center and why these three ideas, being proactive for growth, bringing forth your sense of humor so that you can learn, and, of course, the spiritual lesson. How has that played out in your center? Why don't you share a little bit about CSA in Sacramento?
Well, we're a church that is very diverse. We have a long way to go in widening our definition of diversity. Right now, we're looking at ways of including more Hispanic people, especially more Mexican Americans from our community into the church. But we're very proactive about this. We see it. In fact, we have it on the bottom of our bulletin every Sunday. We have the five qualities that the church holds dearest, and diversity is one of them. So, we're just a pretty diverse church. Now, it didn't come easy, and a lot of people have strong feelings about the way we do it here, about the intentionality of it. But it's just the best thing. I mean, when I ask people, when we do surveys, because we do a survey once every 6 months, you know, why do you come here? What touches your heart? What do you take away from this? How do you feel like you've changed as a result of being a part of this ministry? Diversity always comes up very high on the list. And it's not that people don't work with people who are of different colors and cultures, but the language that the authentic discussion doesn't seem to happen in those places like we've been able to create here. So
but when you started, because you were the founding, you are the founding minister there, is that correct?
Right, it is correct.
Okay, so when you founded Center for Spiritual Awareness, was this something that was intentional at that time for you, or did it just evolve?
Both. It was intentional and it evolved. And once it began to evolve, it became more intentional. So we wanted to take what diversity kind of evolved and maximize it. That's actually how it did happen. We had some people, some African American people who started coming to the church shortly after I started it, and they came up to me one day and said, "Preacher, we love what you're talking about here, and we love being here, but this music sucks. You cannot have this music anymore." And as a result of that, we have developed a real gospel feel to 80% of our music that we have here. And that has helped. It has helped to draw people in because they like the feeling of church, but the experience of new thought principles.
Yeah, I love the marriage between those. And I'm not sure. I think I've shared this story with you, that my first experience at Center for Spiritual Awareness, you were not even there. And I was visiting Sacramento, and I sought out the center for a weeknight, a Wednesday night service, a Wednesday or Thursday night. And I had the most fabulous experience, and it was very much what you just described, because the music made me think of growing up, not just in a black church, but the music had more of a gospel feel, and I was not expecting that at all. And there were people on the platform and during the service who were, from different racial groups and different age groups, and I wasn't expecting that. And the people who were participating in the service, I'm sitting in the midst of, women and men, older and younger. And I was just like, oh, who are these people? And who is this minister? And I don't think I met you for probably at least 2 or 3 years after that.
Yeah.
But I had such a great experience that I talked about it for weeks and weeks, like asking folks, and then I found a minister I knew who had been in, who was here in Dallas, who had been in ministerial school with you. So then she was like, and she explained to me that, yeah, of course, you would do it differently than anyone else, and it would be fabulous.
Well, that's very kind. But, When I talked about not taking yourself too seriously, you really have to do that, because when you're stepping into, for me, I grew up Catholic, and when you go to a Catholic church, you sit down, and if you you act out in any way, you get the big thump from your father on your the back of your head and quiet. And so shortly after we began to grow, and one of the things that because I'm a lesbian, I'm very wedded to the idea of authenticity. I have a really low threshold of tolerance for people saying one thing and doing another. So when we said that we wanted everybody to come and be as they are and not try, we weren't going to try and make anybody into a white Catholic metaphysician here. So when I'm doing my talk, and all of a sudden somebody yells out, "Say it again, preacher." And I'm like, I don't know what I said. I don't know what to say next. Totally stopped dead in my tracks. And I had to learn that, I had to actually get used to that. So, it's a thing.
That is such a great example because of a lot of reasons, but immediately what strikes me is so often leaders will say, "I want to make a difference here, and I do welcome anybody to come. We want lots of different people." But there is an unspoken, unconscious assumption that people will come and then they will just fit into what I'm already comfortable doing and how I'm already comfortable speaking or leading. And when we get into being inclusive, it means that everybody is making some adaptations, the people who come and the people who are already there.
Yes, and I mean, we've had some real knockdown dragouts here. We've had people leave the church. It's not uncommon when our gospel choir starts that people stand up and sway and, you know, put their hands in the air. And it has just worked the last nerve of a few folks who actually had to leave the church because they just could not bear to be witness to it. So, you know, we bless those folks, and it's always hard to lose people, but, you know, they were on their way, and they're in a much happier situation for them right now, and, you know, they're not bad-vibing anybody here.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's tough. It's, you know, we, once I invited all of the African-American, no, all of people of color, so we had African-American, Hispanic, and Asian people in, and I invited them for pizza, and I said, I just want to have this time be a time in which you tell me how we can make this even more inclusive and welcoming to people. And I have to say, you know, I heard some stuff that I didn't love hearing, but it has made us be a better church. So you just have to, you have to really want it. But boy, once it happens, Tracy, it's so much more fun. It's so much more vibrant. Everybody who comes through this church always says, I can't believe the energy in this place.
Mm.
And that's an energy of inclusion. It's nothing else, you know.
I love that. So I'm curious if there is a particular story or example that comes to mind when I ask the question, what's been one of the most difficult or challenging activities or situations related to diversity and inclusion?
Well, you know, it's, let's see, the most difficult, part of it is getting people to stay in the room until the conversation is done.
Mm.
I mean, really done, until everybody is heard completely. For instance, we have a woman who wears hats, African-American woman who wears hats, big hats, every Sunday. And we have another man who all of a sudden he got obsessed with how many hats she had. And he did it with, you could tell his heart was pure, but it was like he couldn't leave it alone. And so finally she just said, I'm not coming back. I don't want to deal with this guy anymore. And I got him in a room, and we talked about it and talked about it and talked about it until we got it clear. And now they're really good friends. They laugh with each other, and, you know, she bought him a hat once and brought it to church. And but it's keeping everybody in the same conversation until the conversation is spent, not until somebody's feelings are hurt.
Yeah, I'm taking a deep breath because I think you're right, and some people might listen to that and say, oh, that's so silly. And if I'm the minister, I'm not sitting in a room with two people to talk about how many hats someone has and why he cares. I mean, I've got bigger, more important things to do. But in reality, if you are serious about creating an environment where people can interact with each other and engage with each other, sometimes you have to either be the mediator or be the moderator or be the person who models asking the questions and interpreting the answers.
Well, and it's like they say about marriages, you know, it's not the big things, it's the little things. It's the cap off the toothpaste that, you know, is the final straw. Of course, at the base of all that is fear of two groups of people who don't really understand each other and who have all the racism and whatever going on.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, it's not just about race. It's, you know, I've got people who do not want gay people to hold hands in church, and they want me to fix that for them. And you know, there's no way I can't fix that for them.
Tell people to stop.
Yeah, right. Get your ruler out and hit them in the hands.
And yeah, that being willing to engage in difficult conversation is, I think it is a key. And I've heard people say to me, when I'm talking with them about, you know, what they can do in their own community, and I've had people say to me, oh, I just don't want to work that hard. I come to church to be around people who believe what I believe, and it should be easy. And I often hear myself saying back to them, I'm hearing you, and what I'm thinking is that church and the people who have common spiritual beliefs and commitments, that's the place to practice working through disagreement and conflict, because we know, you know, that we have this spiritual connection. So if you don't do it here, or if you can't do it, you know, with your church members and your church mates and your, you know, committee members, where are you going to, where else are you going to practice these skills?
Exactly, exactly. And see, and what I really wish I could find language to get across is the end result of that is not that you're more spiritual, but that you're more alive. It's not that you are trying to accomplish something that is almost moral. It's really that you're more alive with it. I mean, if you could see these two people together, you'd just laugh at how much fun they have with each other. Now, might they go home and say, oh, my God, now you know what he did or she did? But together, they're really having a good time.
Right. And if I were to come into your community now, I would not know the history. And I would see these folks engaging with one another in a way that's playful and fun and deep and endearing, having no idea that at some point in the past they were seeing themselves as on different sides.
Yes, yes.
Now, lately I've been drawn to a phrase that we're all in the circle of God and there are no sides in a circle. There are no sides in God, so there can be no sides in our relationship.
Right.
And that your example just reminds me again that we may be standing at different points on the perimeter of the circle, or we may, you know, be at different points in the circle, but we're in the same circle together.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, so I asked you what comes to mind when you think of one of the most difficult situations or challenges. So let's see if one or two things rise to the surface when I ask you, what's been one of the most rewarding situations that have come out of your commitment to being intentionally inclusive?
Well, a couple of things. One is we formed a theater group called Authentic Voices, which is a one-hour reader's theater, and we just tell our stories. We tell our stories of people of color, as gay people, as transgendered people, and it has, we're able to share that not only with our own community, but with other communities. And that has come out of being in an intentional community. And I want to just say, again, it wasn't easy. We slugged stuff out for a full year before we ever got on a stage, because even though we had worked hard at learning more about one another, there were those small mistakes we were making that hurt people's feelings. And so that's one great thing that has come out. The other great thing, I think, is we recently did a workshop on white privilege, and we invited people of color and white people and biracial people to come and be together. And I really got nervous toward the end of it. I think I even asked you for prayer around it, because I was nervous it was going to blow something up here. And it was one of the deepest conversations I've ever been privileged to hear with people. It was really phenomenal. So those are two really great things. And I think just generally coming into a community where you look around and people are way different than you, but where they're all there with a common goal in a safe and loving environment.
Let's talk about white privilege for a little bit, just in case there's anyone listening who isn't familiar with that term in the context of discussions about diversity. Do you want to just talk a little bit about what that means?
Right. For me, I think the best description is this notion of unearned privileges. In other words, and honestly, that's what we want for everybody. We want unearned privileges for everybody, so that when I walk through a store as a white woman, nobody follows me around. That's an unearned privilege. It's a good thing. When people of color walk around a store, that they don't have that same privilege. We just had recently one of our practitioners was saying that she was asked for three forms of ID for a check from the church at the church's bank account, bank. And she noticed that it just felt really, really uncalled for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically, I think it is, the whole notion of unearned privileges. One of the saddest things, Tracy, that ever happened to me here in this church is we have a large children's church here, and we had, this little 13-year-old boy ran up to his mom, and she was talking to a friend of hers, and he said, Billy's mom said I could come home for lunch. Can I go over to their house after lunch? And the mom said, you know, okay, you can go, but I want to tell you this. We haven't had this talk yet, but you must not run in their neighborhood in the front yard. You must not run on their street in the front yard. Mm-hmm. And so afterwards I asked, you know, why did you tell him he couldn't run in the street? And she said, because he's 13 now and he's tall, and a black child in a white neighborhood should not be running because we don't know who has a gun behind a door. And it just broke my heart that a child had to be told that they couldn't run and play with their friend. It just broke my heart.
Yeah, it's sad, very sad. And it's a paradox because everyone wants to tell their child, you have no limits and be yourself and, you know, you're fabulous. And at the same time, it's still in the U.S. especially, and I'm sure in other parts of the world as well, there are still many communities where parents have to educate their children to be on guard or to adapt, or in this case, to not run because it could be misinterpreted by someone who doesn't know them just because of the color of their skin or the way they look. And so, yeah, this idea of white privilege is the things that someone who is white generally, in general, doesn't have to think about or doesn't have to factor in as they go through their day. And the reason that I asked you to talk a little bit about what it means is because if someone's not familiar with it, as you know, the word privilege often is connected to I earned this privilege, I did the work, or I got the education, so now I have the privilege of working in this elite job or, you know, living in this particular place. But in this context of diversity and inclusion, white privilege or other privilege is used to represent unearned privileges, unearned benefits that people just gift you with that you think are normal, but people who are not a part of your group don't experience them.
Exactly, yeah.
So how did that go? How did you set it up? Let's say there's someone listening who's thinking, well, I think my community's ready to have that kind of tough conversation.
Uh-huh.
How did you set it up? How did you talk about it? And then what happened when you did it?
Yes. Well, the way we set it up is we announced that we were going to have it. We invited people back to come. We at first thought we would just have white people because it's a white people's issue. And then we decided, well, that doesn't really feel like how we roll here at CSA. So we decided that we would throw it open to everybody. And so everybody sat in a circle. And then there is a paper written by a woman named Peggy McIntosh. She has, as part of this paper, 50 ways in which white people have this unearned privilege. It's almost like an unaware privilege that we have, that we don't even know we have, and that people of color do not have. And so we put them on little pieces of paper. We separated them out, put one on a little piece of paper, and then we put them in a basket. We had everybody sit in the circle, and we had 31 people of color, 31 white people and 30 people of color come to this event. And so we had a big 60-person thing, and we passed this basket, and only the white people picked out one of those white privileges, and they just picked it out randomly. And then they were asked to stand up and read that white privilege. And then if an African-American person had experienced the reverse of that, they were asked to stand up. And they were asked to keep standing until there was one that was read that they didn't experience. And what was interesting is that many people stood up on the first one and kept standing through all 50. Other people stood up and sat down and stood up and sat down, but the majority of them were white privilege ones. One guy, one Mexican kid, said that he had experienced it on the way to the white privilege talk. And other people said, you know what? You probably noticed that I didn't stand up at all. And the reason I didn't stand up is because I had every single one of those. And I would have been standing the whole time and didn't want to. So it was really a real eye-opener that these are people's friends and people that they had been in foundations class with and they're in the choir with and, you know, they're on cookie duty on Sunday with, and they had no idea that they had experienced these things. Or, in some cases, by white people, that these things didn't even exist. So it was very powerful to have that happen. Then we watched a 12-minute segment or maybe a 20-minute segment of a movie called Cracking the Codes, which talks about the system of racial inequality, and they have a white privilege section in it. And so we watched that movie, all of us together, after we did this exercise. And then we broke into groups, and we took white people one place, people of color another place, and people who wanted to identify as biracial people went to a third room. And the biracial people and African-American people, they were just off and running as soon as the facilitator asked barely any questions at all. Mm-hmm. The white group that I was with was much more sluggish about saying how they felt about what was happening and giving examples of white privilege. It took longer, but once they got to it, they went pretty deep. And we're actually going to have a revisit of it and watch a little more of this movie. I have another movie called Mirrors of Whiteness, which is all about white privilege, and we're going to watch a little bit of that together. So when I asked people at the end, how many people would come back for a follow-up? Everybody but about 3 people raised their hands.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was really a powerful, powerful day.
It sounds like it. And I actually believe that when people do have an experience that's meaningful like that, they realize there's more to talk about. And that it doesn't always have to be yelling and screaming and name-calling.
Right.
So I love the structure, and what a great, it's funny you used the word that it was eye-opening, and I thought, as soon as you said it, I thought, what a perfect word, because the fact that you had people in a circle and you had some standing and sitting and standing, or just standing and standing, you have a visual, like your brain's not just taking in the idea that as a white person, I can be sure that my children would be given school materials that affirm their race, or I can be pretty sure when I get pulled over by a cop, it's not just because of my race. It's one thing to say, oh, yeah, I never thought about that. But then to see 20 people standing up saying, oh, no, I have to think about that all the time, or I have thought about that, you know, when I was growing up. And it becomes not just intellectual, it becomes physical.
Well, and also emotional, because these, like I say, these are not strangers to each other. They know each other and have communicated on other levels. So that was what was nice. What was interesting it was that there was a little scuffle up within the people of color group after, when we were in the big community. Oh, in the big community, we all came back and we said, you know, this is what we talked about and this is what we learned and, you know, how you do with those things. And this woman kept saying, in the black group, and she would say it, she said it maybe three times. And finally, this Asian woman said, I am so sick of this. It's like I don't exist. Not an opportunity to look at each other and start saying, oh, wait a minute, I'm making somebody else feel unvalued.
Mm-hmm.
It was good.
That's very powerful.
Yeah.
Very powerful. Wow. When you showed the excerpt from Cracking the Code, was it the excerpt in the grocery store, or was it?
That was one of the excerpts. We actually, I missaid when I said 12. We watched 20 minutes of it. And,
okay, so yeah, you saw several different.
Yeah, we picked out different clips of it, and I can email you what you know, what we actually, the moment we started it and the moment we ended it.
I was just curious because there are so many. There are a lot of clips in that, and the woman who produced and directed and, you know, put that whole project together, as you, I'm sure, know, is from Northern California, and her work is so fabulous. So Cracking the Code, absolutely, I can recommend to any group that wants to have a healthy conversation, because sometimes the clips, you know, again, are opening the door to having a conversation with people in your community about how they experience it. And I've had a lot of people respond very powerfully to the around white privilege, to the example in the grocery store where two women, one who is there, who are both black, but one who looks to many white people that as if she is white, gets treated one way in writing a check, and her sister-in-law right behind her gets treated a completely different other way, asking for ID and checking the bad checkbook and all of that kind of stuff. It's like people just go, really? That still happens in this day and age? Really? Like, yeah, really.
Yeah, really.
We don't make it up. And to your point of having people who sing in the choir together or do hospitality service together or serve on your board of directors together, to have that experience and look at the person of color and say, wow, I never would have guessed that, because you don't walk around angry all the time and,
exactly.
You know, you're not hostile. And so I didn't think this stuff ever happened. And to have that board member or that choir member turn and look at you and like, really? No, this is a part of my everyday life. And
yeah.
I'm not angry about it. I don't like it, but it's just what I navigate in going through my day.
Yeah, that was what was so powerful about it. People really dropped into a deeper level of knowing each other. And truthfully, that's what this center is all about. It is getting people to really be authentic and knowing that is whole, perfect, and complete just as they are. So it was. I went home feeling like, boy, that was something that we did today. Yeah.
It was a divine idea.
It was. And I was so nervous. I can't tell you. I thought, oh, man, you might have gone one step too far here, my friend.
Well, I did get a sense that you were a little nervous about it going into it, but it was already announced and you were going forward, and I knew it would be just fine. Yeah. There was no way that anything could happen that would be something that would, you know, tear the fabric of what you've built apart, because it's like, I would not recommend necessarily that a church or a center start with this conversation.
Right, exactly.
You know, that would be a whole different thing. Like, no, you don't start here. But with the foundation that has been laid at Center for Spiritual Awareness, I felt pretty confident it would go well.
Yeah. Although I will say this, I think people are thirsty for this kind of conversation. When we've been taking Authentic Voices, which is the theater group I was telling you about, and all that is us telling stories about our lives. And I am amazed at how touched people are by these stories and how open they are to really listening listening to what's going on for folks. So I'm pretty hopeful.
I'm very hopeful. And when there are things that happen in the news, when there are things that, you know, get reported and get debated, especially as it relates to race and sexual orientation, those are very much open doors. Those are doors that can be opened and used to have a real depth of conversation that may start with the focus on whatever that court decision was or whatever that news story was or whatever that coach may or may not have said. You know, it's like that opens the door. But to then have the conversation and bring it to, so what does that mean for us? What does that mean for us in our community? And or what do our spiritual beliefs lead us to do? And to how do we want to show up in the world? But especially when you can bring it to, how are we going to treat each other in this church? In this community, that's when it's like, okay, this is very rich.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things that, not one of the things, but the thing that helps us a lot in these discussions is our philosophy. Knowing that everybody is working with the very best consciousness they have at the moment, it is a powerful way to start a discussion like this, so that it takes the good, bad, and the fact that Ernest Holmes says, We don't have any enemies. We, you know, it is very helpful in creating space, safe environments.
Yeah, so I'm aware that everyone who listens to the recordings may not be a part of Centers for Spiritual Living and or Religious Science and may come from a, you know, different faith system. But every belief system has those groundings of, you know, our task is to be love and to experience love and that God is love. And or how are we doing that in the way we work together and interact with each other?
Mm-hmm.
And so I love always going back to the spiritual foundation and the spiritual principle of it. And we can
I would
do
also
that.
Just I would also just want to make just say one of the most unpopular decisions that I have made that I'm glad I made, I would make it again, is that in an effort to make sure that the leadership was reflective of not who was in the house, but who we want in the house, so that our board of trustees, if a person of color goes off the board, a person of color comes on. If a gay person goes off the board, a gay person comes on. Now, you know, I've gotten a lot of flack for that. Even other people who are doing this work within the church movement think that that goes too far. But what has been helpful to me is to make sure that folks are visible in leadership and in ecclesiastical positions. So, for instance, I only have men. We do a sacred reading every Sunday. I only have men do the sacred reading. And because I want men to be visible as leaders in the church, and we're a very female-dominated ecclesiastical staff. We're getting better. We've got a couple of male practitioners now, but primarily we're a female staff. And so that's been important to me. And, you know, the women come up and say, well, it's not fair. I want to read. No, you're right. It's not fair. And it's purposeful. So it's been a tricky thing, but I also think it works.
So what you just said is so powerful. You're right, it's not fair, but it's purposeful. So often when people, you know, experience things that are not fair, it is personal versus purposeful. It's personal because I like this person or I like this kind of person or I'm comfortable with them versus having a clear and consistent purpose. So, you know, I'm actually applaud you for, you know, taking that stand. And I think it works because you're purposeful about why you have, you know, a stand or slots based on, you know, race or ethnicity or sexual orientation or, you know, whatever category. And I think there are times and places for that. And it, if the leader can stand in a place of integrity around it, then that representation model can work. And you're right. In general, I'm one of those people who will say, be careful. I won't say don't use a representational model. What I usually say is just be really careful if you're going to use a representational model. And the reason I say that is because most people think, now I can check that box, and so that's all I have to do.
Right, right. No. That's just one of the many things.
Right. And so you use it in a way that really creates enforced and intentional visibility. And it's beautiful, and it's great to see that it has worked. So you definitely have a, you know, now you have a track record that says this is how this has helped us, and the people see themselves or people see variety, so they know that there's a place for them because they fit in,
right,
as, you know, the variety versus, oh, I'm black and I must see, you know, four black people. If I'm black and I walk in and the majority of the congregation or community is white, I just want to see that there's some variety so that I know I don't have to be a cookie cutter.
Right.
You know, fit into a cookie cutter that doesn't fit me.
Right.
So here's a question for you, Reverend Georgia. How do you hold yourself to this higher standard, in this consistent standard? I know it can't always be easy.
You know, I think I would like to say I have some spiritual blah, blah, blah. I don't. Here is what is true for me. It's more fun and authentic to be in a community that is truly diverse. That's how I do it. And when things are hard, and sometimes they are, and I second guess myself, and like I did with the white privilege, I'm thinking, what the hell was I thinking? You know, I just remember, look, it's just much more fun when it's... I've been to those churches where people talk the metaphysical talk and how are you today? Oh, you're just a reflection of me and, you know, whatever. But it doesn't feel real. So I just have this hunger for real talk in spirituality, and that's probably what drives me the most.
I'm laughing and trying not to laugh out loud, because anybody who knows you knows that real talk is required if you're going to spend any time around Reverend Georgia. None of this phony stuff. Let's get to the real deal. So what's next? I mean, you've been on this journey for a while. What are you feeling, if anything, that you're feeling called to? What direction are you moving, personally or at your center?
Well, I think at our center, I am now being called to. We have a good representation of African Americans. I'm called now to improve Hispanic and Asian membership here as well. So that's kind of like that's what's in my brain hopper.
Mm-hmm.
Right now. We haven't created any programming to deal with it, although we do have a new, very active Asian American on our board of trustees that's bringing a lot of life to that desire. So that's kind of what I'm doing there, and I'm working on, I'm starting to work on my second book. Those are the two areas that I'm kind of working on now.
I'm taking a deep breath because working on my second book and we're having a talk about diversity and inclusion, I so want to ask more about that, but I'm going to wait because it's brewing within you, and unless you know exactly where it's going and want to share more about it, I'll let you off the hook.
About the book or about the moving toward more greater inclusion of Hispanic and Asian American?
About the book.
About the book. Okay, yeah. No, you have to wait.
Okay.
As I do. I'll tell you, the leaning of it is I'm going to take several of my sermons and increase them. That's kind of where I'm going with the book right now. So it'll just be some spiritual ramblings.
Okay, I will let it go at that.
Because that's
now.
About as far as I could take you. It's as far as I can take myself.
Well, I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about it. So this idea of intentionally inclusive is important to me because I think a lot of people believe if they're just nice and if they just say, I know that diversity is a divine idea, that God created all of us, that inclusion will just simply happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you and I both know that inclusion doesn't just happen on its own automatically. So in our last 3 or 4 minutes, what comes to mind that you want to share that really just affirms those people who want to have more inclusion in their church and their leaders, and they are just wondering how to get started on the journey?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think that if you are a leader that is European American, what you need to do is to get great advice from anybody in your church who is not, and just have conversations with them. It doesn't have to be anything more than let's sit down for a few minutes and look about how we can make this more inclusive. And when somebody opens their mouth, you have to be really careful that you're not defending yourself. If for instance, I don't know how it worked out, but we had only about 5% of our usher staff were people of color. So one of the things that I heard when I gathered everybody together was, you know what, I don't want to be greeted by a bunch of white people every single Sunday morning. And so we moved in the direction of making sure that we recruited more people of color to be part of our greeting, to our usher and greeting team. So whatever people say, the point of that was not about your usher team, but to really listen and not be defensive. So my first reaction was, well, those are great people, and they really love that job, and how can I replace them? And, you know, you just have to stop and listen. So that's my biggest thing. And also is you really have to learn to laugh at yourself because you're going to make mistakes. And, you know, you just have to say, okay, what a dodo mistake that was, and move on.
Learn from it and let it go. Well, I agree with you, and I think one of the best things that a leader can do, as you said, is listen and shut up and just listen. Listen and take notes, and you don't have to decide or agree. Just listen, or else people will stop talking to you, stop making suggestions.
Exactly.
And I love the example with the ushers, because we do think with, you know, we want people to volunteer where they feel drawn to volunteer. And it's important that we also hold every team leader, every ministry team leader accountable for representing the diversity that we are committing to as a core value. So that means they can't only recruit their friends if all their friends are just like them.
Right, exactly.
And that's part of their growth in supporting the growth of the ministry, the church as a whole.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I think is really important for growth of our movement and the growth of our centers and churches is to be really careful not to pigeonhole diversity in just in terms of one race, such as African Americans or Hispanics. We have done some demographic studies here, and any church can do it. It's really easy. Just Google race in Sacramento or racial breakdown in Sacramento or wherever it is you live, and it will pop up with some information. And what we're finding is that there are a number of Laotians and other people. Now, they may not be good candidates, but they may. I mean, we're not going to close the door on that concept. So I know there's a big church in California that always says, well, we just don't have any people of color in our town. It's just all white. Well, no, it's not all white. It just isn't. There aren't a lot of black people, but there are more than just white people in your community. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's important for us to kind of be aware of that also.
Yeah, and the demographics will also tell you about other elements. I did some work a few months ago, kind of behind the scenes for one of the Centers for Spiritual Living Communities, and it was true that percentage-wise demographics, looking at all the different ethnic groups, there was a pretty small percentage. There was a percentage of black and Asian, and actually a larger percentage of Hispanic, which is now a target audience for them. But one of the most revealing things when we pulled up just the basic demographics was age. And the huge percentage of people in their geographic area that were between the ages of like 25 and 45. And we are always talking about growing our, you know, demographics in churches, and we know that, you know, young adults are a challenge. But in their particular geographic area, truly the average age of the total population was 38, I think.
Right.
So it wasn't a question. There was no question looking at the demographics that we need to choose music, and we need to choose programming that really will serve people who are in their 30s and 40s, maybe with young families, maybe not, because that is our biggest opportunity for growth, and then the Hispanic population in all age groups. And they had not been looking at either of those as ways to expand their diversity and be more inclusive.
Right, and once you get a really good junior church program, parents are looking for it, for us. We had 90 children here on Easter Sunday morning, and that's because we have really worked to make our junior church program exemplary. And people want their kids to have these principles of love and compassion and unlimited thinking. It's really quite amazing.
Well, Reverend Georgia, our time is up, and I'm not surprised that I feel we just began, and I could talk to you for another hour. But I want to thank you for saying yes and for sharing your insights and your experiences with the listeners of Intentionally Inclusive.
You're welcome, and thank you so much for doing this this program.
So everybody, listen up. If you want inspiration throughout the week, remember to visit stainedglassspirit.net. We update the blog a couple times a week with ideas and resources and links to videos and other information that will help you attract diversity and create more inclusion. Until the next episode of Intentionally Inclusive, just remember to let your stained glass spirit shine.